Frank Sinatra, did you ever meet him?
Yep.
Tell us about it.
Well, I followed him from 1945, to be exact. I was there in the Navy, New York City, walking down Broadway, little sailor boy, and the Paramount Theater had this movie, and I forget the movie, what the name of it was. I'd never been there, and I saw that they had a stage show in between the movies. I thought, ooh, that's kind of neat, vaudeville type thing. So I go to the movie, and the show's over, theater darkens. All of a sudden, the drapes pull back, and the stage rises up. And here's Tommy Dorsey and his band and this young, skinny kid who they introduced, who was going to do some songs for them. And with that trio, I forget the name of the trio he sang with, too, at that time. His voice just blew me away. He was dressed like I told him this years later, looked like a race tout on a racetrack. He had a plaid coat on, I'll never forget, a polka dot tie, a striped shirt, and baggy pants, and his curly, funny hair. He opened his mouth, and I'm thinking, I have not heard a voice like that. And I love singing. I had a great appreciation for a voice. And it just blew me away. Then I started following him across the country. Wherever I was, I saw him in Chicago, like Nat King Cole at the Pump Room, the Sands in Las Vegas, twice. That's where I met him. A friend of mine's buddy was a pit boss there at the Sands. And I said, see if you can get us tickets to the Sinatra show. He said, I've already booked it for four of us. I said, are we down? He says, we're right down front center. Well, we get down there. We pass all these people still standing in line waiting to get in. We got ushered right by VIP right now. We were right there. Here's the stage. Sinatra comes on. I have a sketch pad with me, of course. So during the show, I made a couple of sketches, and that's when he was singing Nancy with a Laughing Face in honor of his sweet daughter. And who walks out? People started laughing, and here comes Dean Martin. Here is this 40-piece orchestra, violin section, brass, I mean, just a fabulous backup, and here's his voice. And then here comes Dean Martin playing his act. He didn't drink, by the way. I can tell you a story about him. They go into their little patter, go back and forth, and then they sing a couple of duets. I made some sketches of it. Well, this waiter kept coming by and kept looking. This friend of my own, said, that's what he does, you know. He said, could I show that to Mr. Sinatra? I said, oh, hell no, come on. He said, I'd like to show that to him. Well, just about that time, Mr. Sinatra was standing right at the edge of the stage. He looked down, and he had seen me, I guess. He said, can I see that? Yes, sir. Sure. I turned around to him. He said, damn. What are you doing after the show? We're down here at the Dunes. Yeah, to the waiter. Bring him around backstage, will you? We went around backstage, and he and Martin. And he said, I like that. You know, my hobby is painting. I said, really? He showed me a thing he had there in his dressing room that he had done. I said, huh. He said, yeah, it's not very good, but he said, I'm having fun with it. It's what I do on the side. He said, what do you want for that? I said, what do you mean what? I said, I'd like for you to have it. If you want it. He said, hell yes, I want it. Would you sign it to me? Would you put your name on it? I said, sure, if you want it. So I did. Gave it to him. We went back a couple of nights while we were there. We still had that spot right down front. Well, about 4 or 5 years later, a friend of mine, I grew up here in Tulsa, he moved out to Palm Springs, California, and he became a buddy of Frank Sinatra's at their country club. This guy was a real entrepreneurial guy. He was a big buddy of J. Howard Edmondson, the governor
of Oklahoma,
era.
Right?
And he married a classmate of mine's sister. Anyway, he ended up in Palm Springs, and he did PR work and got involved with celebrities, and they had this annual Sinatra fundraiser every year, the Sinatra Foundation type thing. Bring all these high rollers in and big dollars and big fundraiser for charity. Frank did more things that people don't know about. He said, if you tell anybody I did this, I'm not going to do it, okay? That's the way he was. very good to people. Made Sammy Davis Jr., by the way. But anyway, this guy knew my love and admiration for Sinatra. He said, how would you like to do a portrait of him? We'll do it, and we'll have a fundraiser. We'll have an auction. We'll auction the thing off. I said, wow. So I did. Unfortunately, it's one of the disappointments of my life because they didn't like it when it got out there. And I put this big $2,000 frame on it, shipped it out there. And Gene called me and said, Jay, I hate to tell you this, but his agent and his wife, they don't like it. It's not vibrant enough. I said, really? Well, okay. He said, I'm sending it back to you. And then I'm sending some very nice little thank you gifts. Sinatra signed a bunch of stuff for me. A set of golf clubs. All kinds of stuff. And I got the painting back, which is up in my studio. I used to have it hanging over at my son-in-law's restaurant over at Rancho Grande's on 11th. We had the Sinatra corner. Left it over there. People just love the thing. But anyway, unfortunately, that was my big moment that I blew. And I can see now that I look back at it, yeah, they're right. It wasn't vibrant enough for Sinatra. I guess I tried so hard, I over-tried. I just didn't get that something, the right gesture, the right something. And I've said, one of these days I'm going to go back. It's on my bucket list. I'm going to work that thing again sometime. I get Sirius on the radio, and his daughter, Tina, they have their foundation. I said, I'm going to get that website, and I'm going to tell them I did this portrait of their father, and I would like to show it to them. Someday I'm going to get around to doing that. They were just kids then. They wouldn't know about it. I followed him all over. In fact, he was in Norman, did a great concert there. He was in Tulsa right towards the end of his career, out to babysit, you know, and I took all my kids and everybody, because they knew old man just loved Sinatra. I followed him all from the time in 1945, at least a half a dozen times, I guess, over the years. That was one of my big disappointments. And this poor buddy of mine was so embarrassed. I said, hey, you win some, you lose some.
But you had so many, many victories. That would be probably the biggest defeat you had.
Big time.
And so did that linger with you after a while, or did you shrug it off?
Well, sure, what are you going to do? I mean, you know, life goes on. You win some, you lose some. I've been exposed to some big things. Some of them I succeeded at. The kick, the game of the century, the U.S. Opens, a couple of portraits and things. But I never pushed it.
Never pushed, what do you mean?
Trying to be big-time success. I got involved in galleries in Santa Fe, New York, Chicago, Dallas. I saw that end of my field that just didn't appeal to me. It was too high pressure, crank it out, expose yourself to things that were against your principles. I'll never forget, years ago, a gallery in Chicago wanted to put me on contract. I thought, oh boy, that's great. But to produce a number of paintings a year, I said, I can't produce that number. Oh, yes, you can. I said, I'm left-handed. What happened to my left hand just drops off from overuse? Oh, no, that'll never. We got other guys. I said, I'm not a hack, number one, okay? You want me to be a hack and crank this stuff out, the same thing over and over? You know, that's the trick, is to get something and then do variations off of it. I said, that's not me. I don't work that way. And nobody owns me, by the way.
You're more free-spirited than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just don't like to be used, I guess, for, quote, success. I could tell you names of guys in my business that I went to school with, big names. They were very successful in their public and their works, total failures in their private life, their family, and so forth. They had no life outside their work. They were a slave to what they did, and this addiction was just overwhelming them to the extent that they couldn't do anything else because they couldn't relax, let's say, and back off a little bit. They figured they would not be able to do it, which is a bunch of baloney. I observed people like that, the Rockwells, the Sargents, contemporaries that I know, and I said, That's no way to live.